Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, big town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it is a Monday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Astros win a baseball series yesterday. Brian, do you, your truck, do you have a Think Pink license plate holder?
I think I do.
Worst parking spot I've ever seen in my life. The parking job that you performed today before your work was awful, terrible, absolute worst. The way that you parked has restricted the opportunity to park anybody to park next to you. Anybody.
Really?
Unbelievable how bad it was.
You drive the Lamborghini today?
No, I'm trying to think of... I'm going to have to go down and look at this at some point. I don't know what you're referring to. I know I was between the lines.
You weren't between the lines. Definitely not between the lines.
One side is not even another parking spot because it's the storage shed or whatever.
With the parking spot that you're restricting is to the driver's side of you, the only parking spot that you can, that also has two posts that holds up the little carport.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've restricted anybody from parking next to you.
Well, anybody. A car was parked next to me when I parked there, so apparently
they had
not.
A very difficult time getting out then. Unless they went straight, because I took the spot that was actually like in front to the left is what I did, but I couldn't pull in from the back end. Pause.
Selfish, Brian.
It wasn't selfish. It was just, I don't think he was like, hey, I'm going to take up two spots. It was more.
You don't know that.
I have a pretty good feeling.
I don't know.
I don't think Brian's a selfish guy. Do you?
Brian might be just protecting Dings from his automobile.
I don't think Brian's selfish. I don't think that's the reason that Brian parked poorly today. I think it was a lack of paying attention to detail. I think he was kind of aloof to the situation, which happens to the best of us. I just wanted you to know that it was the worst parking job I've ever seen in my life.
That seems like a vast overstatement, because I know I'm not over a line, and I've seen obviously countless people park over lines, but I will look at it today when I get back out there. I'll look at the film and reassess it.
It's not great. All right, good, bad, and ugly is how we start all of our shows. We start with the good, the bad, the ugly from the Houston Astros weekend. And we always let the Astros dictate what we're going to start with. And the Astros took 2 of 3 against a good Brewer team and continue their winning ways. So a lot of good to get to, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. I think you have to start with just the heater that Kyle Tucker continues to be on. I mean, the fact that the only thing that could seemingly slow him down was the Orbit Green Dayglow cleats that kind of delayed his 2-home-run outburst yesterday. But he has been on a heater. He leads the American League in home runs.
Tied, yeah.
At 15. Fantastic performance. He keeps hitting the ball and playing good defense. And you can't say enough good things about Kyle Tucker right now.
Yeah, that's Kyle Tucker's baseball savant is awesome. It's always nice to look at if you want to nerd out on that. He tied for the American League in home runs. You know what else he leads the American League in? He leads the American League in on-base percentage. He leads the American League in slugging. And, of course, if you lead the league in both of those, then you're going to lead the American League in OPS. Kyle Tucker, in my opinion, has had the best start to the season of anybody else in the American League. He's been fantastic. He's been really, really good. Thank goodness he's under contract for one more year after this one, because he's getting pricey. And look, if you want to make it even like a bigger conversation, this is why you sign these contracts early. Now, Kyle Tucker, you know, maybe he bet on himself. Maybe he had a fair offer and he just, I think I can get more by producing well and then testing free agency. Because at this point, he's going to test free agency. You can make the case for guys like Jeremy Pena, too. Like Jeremy Pena has all of a sudden his price is way up here whenever it wasn't way up here during the offseason. So sometimes you got to lock up those players before you're really able to. Like the point whenever you're comfortable of locking up a player, it's too late. You have to be a little bit uncomfortable and roll the dice and make a gamble on a player. They got really lucky with Yordan Alvarez. Christian Javier really accepted a very below market deal, so they were able to lock him up. But even that one's like, okay, he hadn't done it for all that long. At times you have to be uncomfortable to sign those guys to the long-term deals, because if you're not, they're probably not going to sign it unless you just totally screw over a guy like Yordan Alvarez.
And, you know, it's risk-reward, right? I mean, you have to do some really deep studies in terms of your analyzation to call a guy a franchise-type player or a guy that you're going to lock up long-term. Brewers just tried to do it with the 20-year-old outfielder. The jury is still out by a long shot on him. This is, the ones that work out, then, phenomenal for your organization. You mentioned the fact that, Yordan is one of those guys. That's just a steal of a deal. But when you look at the John Singleton deal, and it wasn't that much as you look back, but it was a 10-year, $10 million deal or whatever it was. They thought he had the goods. And then, a lot of off the field and other things kind of delayed him, and he still never really kind of came into his own. But it seems like more and more good teams have the ability to analyze the talent and lock them up early when they can. Braves are a perfect example.
Yeah, you gotta trust your eye. You gotta trust your talent judgment. Okay, is this guy? I don't even think he needs to be a franchise player, because usually you're getting these guys on pretty affordable deals. I think they have to be a big league regular, and you have to make that decision. You have to be able to trust your eye. That's why general managing is projecting what a guy's going to be, not the back of the baseball card, which is why it's super annoying anytime they mention
the back of his baseball card.
Mention Pena. Pena's been amazing. Pena leads the American League in hits. He's hitting .328, and he has an .829 OPS. Factor in the defense, which computers don't love Pena's defense. I just don't understand.
God, if you watched that series this weekend and you don't think Jeremy Pena can play great defense, you're on something.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of, Jeremy Pena, but he continues to hit the baseball. He's taking the best of his rookie year, the best of his second year, and is combining it into this third year where he's having a breakout season. He's emerging as a top five shortstop in baseball. And it goes to show you, like, his work ethic, too. Like, you could already tell by looking at him, his body looks very similar to mine, that he has an incredible work ethic. And, okay, well, what does Jeremy Pena need to do in the offseason? Well, he needs to stop chasing at pitches way out of the zone, the breaking ball away. He needs to elevate the baseball, bring back some of the power that we saw in his rookie season. And look what he's doing. Like, this is a lot of times why work ethic is so important in evaluating young players, because some players have talent and then they never improve. Look at Jadeveon Clowney. Tons of talent, maybe more talent than anybody who's entered the league in the last 20 years at the position, but never really worked, never really matured, never really developed into this, can't-miss defensive end. Then you have a guy like Jeremy Pena, who's not the most talented player in the world, but he works incredibly hard, and he's having this breakout season in year three that a lot of people, quite frankly, didn't see coming.
No, and the other thing about Pena is one of the big knocks on him over the early stages of his career was just his inability to kind of either lay off off-speed pitches on the outside part of the plate and or be able to take the balls the other way. And he's doing both. I mean, he's completely kind of retooled his swing in the offseason. He settled it down. He quieted it down. And he is off to an unbelievable start that should put him as one of the elite shortstops in the game if he continues with this, because of the fact that his defense is so good.
Yeah, he's been fun to watch. Jake Meyers, unbelievable.
I wanted you to say it. You've been his biggest fan. He just I have to give him his flowers.
You wanted me to say it, but you didn't let me say it. Okay. It's true. A .302 average for Jake Meyers, .920 OPS. I mean, he's a top what center fielder in baseball?
I mean, right now, just for this season, with the way he's playing, he should be a top 10 center fielder in the game.
Yeah, he's been really good, and I'm glad that he's getting a run of play. You know, he's in Chaz McCormick coming back today. We'll see how that's going to happen. What do they do? I can't imagine that Jake Meyers is going to see a reduction in playing time, though. Like, there's no way you can take out a guy with the defense that Jake Meyers has shown this season that has an OPS over 900. Do I think he's going to stay there? No. Do I think he's going to stay north of a 300 batting average? No. But while he's producing this way, I don't think there's any chance that they can take him out of the lineup.
I think you have to ride a heater like this out. I mean, he has earned the right to play every day because of the numbers that he's putting up, because of the productivity, because of the big spots that he's coming through in, and the fact that he plays good defense. I don't think that it's an option right now, and it shouldn't be. It used to be, well, you can platoon him depending on who, what lefty or righty on the mound. No, the way he's playing right now, he warrants being in there every day and then figure out the rest of the lineup because of the fact that he has been so effective offensively, which has been the bonus because you know he can play good defense.
Yeah, he's been on a tear for the Houston Astros, which you get those guys producing the way that those two guys have produced, then you have an incredibly deep lineup. Like we were talking so much early in the year, well, the lineup construction's terrible. The hitting with runners in scoring position's not good. Is that because of the lineup construction? We've had this, you know, massive argument going for the first, you know, quarter of the year, and it turns out that really you just need production. Because when Jeremy Peña is hitting, when Jake Meyers is hitting, Yordan Alvarez actually hasn't even started hitting yet, you have a very deep lineup because it extends the lineup. You have a guy like Jake Meyers with north of a 900 OPS batting, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 for better parts of the year. Mauricio Dubon is a guy who is can certainly hold his own offensively, certainly with the contact and the average. Joey Loperfido has hit for a higher average than a lot of people thought he was capable of. Jeremy Singleton actually gives you an at-bat as opposed to Jose Abreu, who hadn't given you an at-bat. So this offense has suddenly become very deep. They're tied for fourth in the AL in runs. They're first in batting average. They're second in OPS. You know, this is the type of offense we thought that the Astros were going to have that's capable of being one of the top three offenses in the entire league.
No doubt. I mean, if this offense was just a little bit better with runners in scoring position, I mean, you'd see those numbers be even more inflated. They've had plenty of opportunities, but the fact that they lead all of baseball in batting average tells you that there's talent. We saw it on the roster. That's why, you know, I kept saying that I'm not ready to throw in the towel yet. I'm not ready to give up on this team because as good as and deep as this pitching staff is capable of being, this offensive lineup, and it wasn't just taking Maldonado out of the lineup, it's the fact that you have guys that have the potential to hit way better than they even have in their career, along with guys that for the majority of their career have been above average. And Yordan's not even close to being who we've seen him be in the past. If he gets going as well with Tucker, with Altuve, the fact that Bregman is now seemingly hitting it, you know, consistently, and the guys we mentioned, this is a really, really above average and quality lineup, top to bottom now, with really very few holes in it.
Yeah, it's one of the best offenses, I think, in the American League when things are clicking, when things are going. And this is without Yordan Alvarez hitting. This is with Yiner Diaz not hitting yet, which, you know, maybe the tolls of the position are taking their toll on Yiner Diaz as an offensive player. I think he's going to hit better than he's hit currently, but he's certainly struggling. And Yordan Alvarez, who I think is one of the better offensive players in all of baseball, he's hadn't produced quite yet for you. So this offense still has more room. Like, there's still a lot of room between where they're at right now and their ceiling. I still think they have a lot of room between where they are now and their ceiling.
Agreed, because on the side of the guys that have already shown you what they've been able to do in their career, you expect Yordan to get going again. You expect that Bregman's been a better hitter than what he showed early, and now the signs are that he's pointing in the right direction. And then on the flip side, you hope the other guys are able to maintain what they've been able to do. Can Jake maintain it at that level? Probably not. But can he get it to a point where it's still above average in this league? It's a possibility. Peña keeps going the way he's going. Yordan needs a little kick. I mean, Yiner needs a little kickstart, but the fact is he got off to a really good start to start the season. If it all clicks at the right time at the same time, This is a devastating offensive lineup for any pitching staff to face.
Not James Click, though. He's long gone. What other goods do you have?
Did I say James
Click? No. Oh. I'm just saying you said Click, and I was making a little joke. What else? What other goods do you have?
Well, I mean, I still think it's a tough situation. I like the way Joey Loperfido continues to play the game. I think he plays the game the right way. I think he continues to be a contact hitter, which we didn't think he was going to be. We thought it was going to be boom or bust, and he got his first home run. But at the same time, he's not hitting the home run ball, but he's getting on base and getting hits almost every game when he's in the lineup. And that's just such a bonus. It's going to be real interesting when Chaz comes back from that perspective, too, because of the fact that he has been doing what he's supposed to do, doing his job, and hitting the baseball, I think, better than a lot of people expected.
Yeah, he's it's going to be a tough decision because Chaz McCormick's going to come back today. I'm sure the lineup's going to be out here in the next couple of minutes. Might already be out. And I bet you that Chaz plays today. Like, you're not going to activate him and then not play him. And they have a lefty on the mound. Chaz is good against lefty, so Loperfido's probably not going to play. Yeah, they have the lineup out. And actually, Chaz isn't in the lineup. Altuve, Tucker, Yordan DHing, Bregman, Peña, Singleton, Meyers up to the sixth spot, Yiner bats eighth, and then Mauricio Dubon's in left field batting ninth.
Okay.
So I expected Chaz to be back out there with a lefty. Like, maybe they didn't. I haven't seen the activation
Cabbage
news.
Goes down?
I'm assuming that in the first move it'll be Cabbage.
Yeah.
Now the second
that's
one
really interesting.
Whenever Jose Abreu comes back, and we'll get into Jose Abreu a little bit later, that's going to be the one that I'm very curious on because I'm torn. Like I've been going back and forth on this. Either it's Kessinger, who you know doesn't play a whole lot, but he gives you insurance in case there's an infielder that goes down, especially if Mauricio Dubon, like a day to day like today where he's playing in left field, or is it Joey Loperfido while Jose Abreu comes back and you're like, okay, let's get a lot of first base reps for Joey Loperfido in case of Abreu failing, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, the way I look at it is I don't feel like Loperfido deserves to be sent down, but I understand it if it's going to be, you know, positional management just because of the fact that you need guys at certain positions. But I just feel like Dubon is going to be your first line of defense to be, you know, fill in infielder when needed. But at the same time, I don't know what you're going to get. No, I don't think anybody knows, and they're only can cross their fingers and hope that you get something out of Abreu because this is the probably the last go round. But you're clicking right now. Guys are playing, performing, both the starters and the rotational guys that are getting in, like Joey Loperfido. That's why I don't feel like he deserves to be sent down. I could see Kessinger going, but it does limit you a little bit in what you know and what you have to face if you need, have an infielder that goes down or you need someone there.
Yeah, I'm torn. I could see it going either way. Like I could also see them play the big picture where it's like, okay, big picture, we want Joey Loperfido to be our first baseman. They're obviously not comfortable with him playing first base yet. Go play there for 15 straight days, and then let's talk then. What other goods do you have? I have a couple more.
Go ahead.
Spencer Arrighetti, I thought was very good. His final line doesn't look better than he pitched.
Yeah, the seventh inning was just
Yeah, I thought he was a bit unlucky, quite frankly. Like, there was some soft contact. I mean, sure, I'm not denying that. I have no problem with him pitching the seventh inning, though.
I don't have him going out there and starting it, but I think when people are going to be critical of it, and deservedly so for the seventh inning, but understand that that was as deep as he had gone into a game all season long, and I'm sure that he was a bit gassed because he had some high leverage situations.
There was some folks bashing Espada for bringing him back out, which is flat-out dumb. He had 80 pitches. Ronel Blanco is currently serving a suspension, so you're a pitcher down already. Ryan Presley's unavailable because of his sore little ring finger, so you're down two pitchers. You're down two pitchers. A guy's throwing 80 pitches, part of a six-man rotation. Your bullpen shorthanded. Your pitching staff shorthanded by two. That was as obvious a slam dunk decision as there possibly can be. And then the revision is, well, look what happened. Yet there was no-brainer. It was a no-brainer for Joe Espada.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, if he's pushing 100 pitches for one more inning, then it's something that you have to consider in the other direction. But I felt the same way. I felt like you were up five runs to start the inning, too. So you had a good cushion. Throw him out, and he's throwing 80 pitches. Throw him out there. Get him out there again. If he gets into trouble, then you do what you did. You get the bullpen up quickly, and you adjust. But it wasn't like he was getting ripped all over. It was unfortunate, the walk, because that really kind of set him up for disaster as opposed to maybe he gives up a run there. But at the same time, he's been pitching better and better, which gives you more encouragement for the pitching staff because Hunter Brown is still such a question mark.
Yeah. One more good for me, and then we'll see if Brian has any. No, definitely not his parking. 1.96 ERA for Taylor Scott in 21 games. You know, we kind of bashed the front office of the Astros. I don't think that Bagwell's worrying about the final reliever on this bullpen. Dana Brown, like Ronel Blanco, he hit on that. We talk about that all the time. Look, he brought in a bunch of 4A guys. He brought in like half a dozen 4A guys, hoping that one or two of them would actually like emerge. Well, here is the one. Here is the one. Taylor with an E. Taylor Scott has a sub-2 ERA in 21 games. And if you're a believer in the baseball savant, which I am, it is not fluky. Like, it is not a fluky sub-2 ERA. He's been really good, and then the analytics back that up. It's been good. It's been fun to watch the – where is he from? He's from South Aussie, right?
South Africa. I think he's South Africa.
Definitely not South – I don't even think South Aussie is a thing.
No, I don't think that is up. Either. But, yeah, look, I think the two biggest surprises to me on this entire baseball team for the most part have been Seth Martinez's ability to be more than a mop-up guy and Taylor Scott to be – exactly what this team needed at a time when no one expected anything from him. Those two guys have been better than steady, have been really, really a huge positive shot in the arm that this team desperately needed, and have carved out a niche for themselves on this roster, which is fantastic because you've had so much disaster with so many injuries. So, yeah, he's been doing his job and then some. I think Martinez gets some credit, too, because of the fact that he continues to perform when he's thrown out
there. Yeah, he's been a good, too. We'll get to Brian's goods on the other side because he's punished. He can't talk in this opening segment for that parking job. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRNP listener line. line, 713-780-3776. You can find us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, or YouTube at ESPN Houston. Blankers is on Twitter. Is it Pac-Man Joel? Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Brandon. Busy show. It's a Mailbag Monday, 4:30. We'll talk about Abreu being called up this week. Is he back? How good is the foundation for the Houston Texans going forward as well? But you're good, you're bad, you're ugly from the Astros weekend. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Golfers, the dog days of summer are upon us. There's been some rain, and we know a lot of it in the last 2 weeks. And on top of that, it's going to be really, really hot and humid. If you love to play golf, but you're a little hesitant when the weather turns or when it gets too hot, I need to tell you about X-Golf and Katie, and you need to check it out. Because X-Golf and Katie is the answer if those are some of the things that are problems for you when you swing the clubs. The fact is, they are the best simulators I've ever been on. They're the only X-Golf simulators in the area. And X-Golf Katie is set up perfectly for you for an entire day of fun. Because to be honest with you, you can do everything from your chipping and your putting. Yes, your putting. It's accurate, and it is unbelievably good at being able to get practice in. To charting and tracking all of the direction, all of the distance, and all of the spin rate on all of the balls that you hit in your golf bag. You can play 50 of the greatest courses around the world and play course golf, or you could just use it like a driving range. Play your own golf ball, put it in the simulator, and go and have at it. It's a blast. If you play 18 holes, you don't have to walk to your ball or drive to your ball or take all that time between shots. You can get a round of golf in about an hour and 15 to an hour and 30 minutes maximum. That's unreal, because now you've got more time for the rest of your day. It's fantastic, but it's also a great sports bar, great food, great beverages, tons of TVs in a clean and fun environment. Check it out, because if you go once, especially if you're a golf fan, you're going to be there again and again. If you're a sports fan, the sports bar attributes are also enough for you to want to stay. Check it out today, X-Golf Katie online.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Blank and Branham on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Killer Bees, good, bad, and ugly from the Astros weekend. All right, Brian, you're good.
I'm allowed to give my good now?
I'm dropping it.
The ban is over?
I've dropped it.
Okay, all right. I mean, you guys have obviously ran down a lot of them, but John Singleton hits in each game of the series against the Brewers. Obviously, that's going to make the conversation we have coming up interesting, because he hasn't stopped performing. And then I thought of kind of the unsung heroes from Saturday kept the Astros in it after the short start from Verlander. But Seth Martinez, like Joel mentioned, and then his favorite Parker Meschinski go 4 1/3 scoreless. Astros don't end up winning the game, but they kept the score within striking distance, just two runs where they could have made the comeback. Didn't go their way, but good job, good effort by those two guys.
Good job, good effort. It's like that kid telling. What did he say? Did he say it to the LeBron? Was it LeBron way back in the day where he's running off the floor? He said, good job, good effort. I think it was Heat. It might have been Wade.
I didn't say that intentionally, but now that you mentioned that, I'm remembering something, but I don't remember the specifics of it.
I think it was a very popular meme at the time.
It might have been.
Good effort. Yeah. I'll get to my bad, since it's a perfect segue there. I thought Justin Verlander screwed that game up. Mm. Justin Verlander is the reason the Astros lost that game. Was pitching well. You're up by a run. A run or two. But William Contreras hits the 3-run homer. Yeah, and the issue that I had wasn't that he gave up the home run. Like, okay, guys are going to get you. Guys are going to some days beat you. The problem was that Justin Verlander knew that was his last hitter. Justin Verlander knew that he was not getting Christian Yelich, who was on deck. William Contreras was his last hitter. You had first base open. You have second and third. There's two outs. William Contreras was all over your stuff. He fouled off pitch after pitch after pitch after pitch. The longer an at-bat goes, the more it favors the hitter. They're seeing your stuff and they're on it. The final four pitches that he fouled off prior to the home run were fastballs, all in the zone, all in the top third of the zone. Over and over. Here you go. Here you go. Here you go. Here you go. And Justin Verlander's pride and stubbornness, because, he's a Hall of Famer and all of this, and he probably wanted to get the victory, get out of the inning, all of that. He didn't think of the team in that moment, because in that spot, you throw a slider out of the zone. You hope you get the swing and the miss. If you don't, who cares? First base is open. This guy's on you. Walking him is nowhere near the worst result in that situation. First base open, two outs. You know what the worst result is? You continue to challenge him with fastball after fastball that he's right on, that he's fouling off, that he's seeing over and over and over and over again. The worst result's a three-run homer. Justin Verlander got stubborn, didn't throw a slider out of the zone to see if he would get the swing and the miss because he knew it was his final hitter and he wanted to get through five innings.
Yeah, my big thing was in watching all that, I felt the same frustration you did because of the fact that I felt he was being selfish looking for a win. I felt like this was all about his pursuit of 300 wins. This was all about him doing what he needed to do so that he could get the benefit of being eligible to get the win as opposed to do what's best for the team. Because if you look at the stats, and you know he's a stat guy, and you know he's an analytics guy, but, I mean, you're facing a guy that is the best hitter in Major League Baseball with runners in scoring position. So you know that the guy is a good hitter. And you know he's on your fastball because even when you were empty in the tank trying to up it by a mile an hour or two, he was hitting him straight back into the net, which meant he was on every pitch. You as a team can live another day, and you as a pitcher can live to see another start, but I could not agree more. If he would have thrown the slow curve, if he'd have thrown a slider, if he'd have thrown something, because Contreras knew in his heart of hearts after the third one too, all he's going to bring me is fastballs. He is going to try and win this battle, and that's how personal he's making it. And he barreled it up, and you got beat. And then he had to tip his cap after the game and say, yeah, I love the battle, and he won, but he didn't have to.
When you have first base open, two outs, you shouldn't be in 13, 14 pitch at-bats. Like, you shouldn't. Like, it should have come, like, on pitch 9. Pitch 10 is when that slider out of the zone should have come. Hey, how about a fastball up at the eye? See if he's going to chase up there. There is no business for him to throw that many strikes in a row, really with the same pitch, really in the same spot, against a really stinking good hitter. Verlander got stubborn in the moment. I think what you said is part of that, too. I think it's all like part of the package of that one decision in that one moment, wanting to get through five, wanting to get another win. And he, like, it's tricky because he knew it was his last hitter. Like, if Verlander knows he's going to get the opportunity to get out of the inning, he probably throws one out of the zone. But he knew that he wasn't going to get Christian Yelich, who was on deck. So he knew that he was out of the game no matter what following that. So he got a bit stubborn. Gave up the
three-run
homer. To the
point you made, too, on the fact that we should not have seen a 13-pitch at bat. If he just kind of toned it back 5-6 pitches earlier, not saying that there's a good chance, but there was a chance he might see Yelich. But the fact is, you've got more pitches left in the tank. You didn't burn that many pitches on the at-bat, and you still get the chance that he's going to chase a breaking pitch, even if it's in the dirt, or like you said, a fastball at his eyes, just because of the fact that he is so dialed in on one pitch being somewhere in the zone because he didn't want to walk him. And good hitters are going to be right on that pitch. I would have definitely taken the challenge and said, if I'm going challenging him one-on-one, it doesn't mean I have to throw fastball.
Yeah, and what's the harm? Like, what's the risk there? You know what I mean? Like, this life is a game of risk-reward. Pitching against hitters is a life of risk-reward. Okay, I want to get ahead in the count. Let me throw a breaking ball, which he's not as good at hitting. There's a fastball. There's a certain location where he's not as good. Like, our life is risk-reward. Pitching is risk-reward, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The risk there is you walk the hitter. Who cares? Mm-hmm. There's no problem there. And I understand Yelich doesn't stink anymore. But it's not a big deal, especially with a guy who's all over your stuff and is fouling stuff off over and over and over. That was really my only bad or ugly. I have a couple other small ones. What do you guys got, bad or ugly?
Brian, you want to start? Go ahead.
Miñarr Díaz, 0 for 7, 3 strikeouts over the weekend. Obviously, didn't play all 3 games, but he's had struggles this year with runners in scoring position in this series. You know, he went 0 for the series. The Astros bats have kind of picked him up. I mean, Pena and Singleton, Jake Myers, a lot of the names we mentioned, have made it to where maybe we don't notice because the Astros are winning anyway. But certainly for the Astros to get where they want to be long-term, Yonner's going to have to pick it up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It went from just runners in scoring position problems and hitting around 300 to hitting 265 and not looking like the same kind of hitter. And the pop has definitely been MIA. That's been a problem. To me, one for me is Hunter Brown, because I think that Hunter Brown was better. But when you look at it, at a certain point, it might come down to Hunter Brown and Arrigetti. And Arrigetti has pitched better. We said this when we start looking at, when's Rikiti coming back? When are they going to make a move when you get Blanco back? What are they going to do? It seemed like that Blanco and Arrigetti were in a two-man competition for whoever pitched better from that point until a decision had to be made. And right now, it seems like Arrigetti's a more competent and competitive pitcher than Hunter Brown.
Yeah. Eric Geddes looked better in his last two starts than Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown has, like, the stuff. Eric Geddes, I hesitate to say he has the results, but does he have scoreboard over Hunter Brown? I guess. Hunter Brown's been one of the worst pitchers in all of baseball this year, quite frankly. He's been one of the worst pitchers in all of baseball. And it's frustrating because he flashes. He flashes some high moments, and then he'll have an inning where he gets shelled. And everybody's trying to, like, figure out the reason. Why is this the case with Hunter Brown? Should he have an opener? And he's like the follower. Don't let him pitch the first inning. Maybe he should be an opener. Maybe he should be the long guy out of the bullpen. Like, everybody's trying to create the issue with Hunter Brown. You know what the issue for Hunter Brown is? In this place is a starter. This place is an opener. This place is a follower. This place is a reliever. His command sucks. Yeah. Like, that's just the keep it simple, stupid, brutal honesty of where Hunter Brown is at as a pitcher, is that his command is awful. And it doesn't matter if he's starting, relieving, closing, mopping up, following, whatever. If you have poor command, you're going to get hit at some point. Why is Hunter Brown inconsistent? Because his command is bad. So sometimes his command's getting him in trouble by walking a few guys. Then his little soft contact, bloop, single, run scores, and then it all unravels. Or maybe sometimes his command's bad and he's leaving it middle, middle. And what happens when you leave pitches middle, middle to big league hit? They hit the ball a very long way. So the opener, follower, reliever, starter, it's all nonsense. What is Hunter Brown's issue? Command.
Yeah, it is. And I would also, and I've said this previously, I would also simplify it. I would narrow it down on the amount of what the pitches he's going to throw. You still have good enough that are competitive pitches in your repertoire where you don't have to go five pitches and use all of them. And I believe that you could still look. There's been plenty of pitchers, and Mariano Rivera is probably the greatest of all time. Was basically a two pitch pitcher, but he has more than that that are competitive. But get rid of the pitches when you go back and look, and you chart the analytics, and you watch the videos. You are leaving certain pitches almost consistently every time you throw them over the heart of the plate where you are going to get crushed. Take him out of the repertoire for a while so that maybe that can do a positive solid for you in terms of your control.
And if you just wanted to, like, eventually get back to those pitches, okay. Right. Like, I don't love it, but okay. Like, I'll meet you halfway. But build from the foundation. Like, build from the foundation of a really good two-pitch mix. And if that makes him, like, only go four innings as opposed to, like, his desire of going six, who cares, man? You're not going four innings right now anyways because you're getting rocked. So I like your idea of, okay, let's limit it down to a two-pitch mix. Mm-hmm. Build your foundation. Have, like, your stuff that you can go to get hitters out when you need them or the pitches that you have command over. Because his command right now is killing him as a big league pitcher.
Let's also keep in mind, too, that we've seen this from the best of the best, and Verlander was great about this, where he started working on a slow curveball. He kept it in his back pocket when teams midseason or whatever had watched him a lot. They had video on him. They hadn't seen that pitch. When he brings it out, it's a surprise to a lot of guys, and it's effective. Put it in your back pocket for a while. Hone it in. Work on it in your bullpen sessions and everything like that. Don't use it in a game. At a certain point, when you feel like you've refined it and you have more control over it, maybe you bring it back. But in the short term, use the pitches that are above average pitches in Major League Baseball. Fastball, slider have been extremely effective for him, and you know the ones that haven't been, and put those away for a while.
713-780-ESPN. We'll get to your good, bad, ugly when we come back. 713-780-3776. Also, we've heard by now that Jose Abreu is probably going to join the Astros on the next road trip. My theory on why Abreu is coming back. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. 713-780-ESPN, 1703. Does Branham have any friends? Very few. 71 AR Platinum. Bad and ugly, the Astros may see Abreu Friday. Leave him down. Get to my theory here in a moment. Try it on for size with you guys. 60-30, bringing Abreu back. While things are clicking, is dumb. Loperfito needs to stay in left. Chaz does not need to be in the lineup. We'll talk about that a little bit later. No Chaz today. I haven't seen news on Chaz either. Like, I just skimmed Twitter real quick. I haven't seen that they've made it official. I wonder if maybe there's a hangup.
Yeah, the assumption was that he was going to be back in Houston ready to play in the Angels series, but also I think the assumption was he might have started hitting the ball and looking real comfortable at the plate, and I don't think that was the case, at least through Saturday. I don't know that he had a hit in San Antonio.
I think he picked up one.
Yesterday?
Yeah, I believe he did. I could be wrong on that, though. I don't like minor league baseball. 6856, you guys act like the Astros are playing good teams. Y'all played the Oakland A's, a mediocre Milwaukee team, and now the Anaheim Angels. Y'all lucky you guys' division is trash. Milwaukee leads their division. I mean, there is that.
Yeah.
But, look, I mean, there's some validity to that. I understand he's talking a little bit of trash, but, yeah, they are taking advantage of the weak spot of their schedule. That's what you're supposed to do, is take advantage of the weak part of your schedule.
I've said this, it might be the same person that continues to send these kind of texts in or messages in. The fact is you play the schedule that you're given. It was a really tough schedule to start the season in a lot of ways, but you played that schedule too. You're supposed to, as a good team, take advantage of the teams that you're supposed to beat. In years past, that's been a huge problem for this team, this franchise. The fact that you're doing what you're supposed to do at a time when you sorely needed to do it, quit hating and just, you know, sit back and maybe you can have your flowers if they get into June and they start playing the Mariners and they start playing other teams. And then you can start to, you know, to have some more validity to your rant. The fact is, the schedule is what it is, and they're doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. And plus, the Astros can't really be choosers, right? Like, the way that their start was, you beat whoever's on the schedule. 2787, the ugly. Stroh's pitchers continue to walk batters. Free passes have absolutely killed this team. I don't know where they rank amongst big league pitching and walks. I would imagine it's not terrible. But you mean that premise is true just in baseball. Like, walks come back to kill you.
No doubt.
I hate walks. Walks are one of my biggest pet peeves, as I advocated for Justin Verlander to walk William Contreras a little bit earlier.
Not necessarily. Just challenge him with a pitch out of the zone and see if you can get him to chase.
But walks have their moments. Like, that's a spot where you can live with a walk, or a walk's not that big a deal. But like leadoff walks, or you have runners at first and second, one out, walk there. Like, if Barry Bonds is up, like, that's much different. Let's see. The Astros are last in the American League in walks, 188. So I didn't realize that. That is a lot of walks. I wonder how many of those are from the fringe guys, like the guys that led to you having the worst ERA in the American League for a while.
The early Arrighetti, the Brown blow-ups. I mean, you had those mixed in where they couldn't get an out, and they had their issues. But, yeah, and then you start talking about some of the relief pitchers that have been a revolving door trying to find extra arms when there's a dire need for an arm of any kind. Those will catch up to you.
Yeah, so I think that's probably factors in. But you're right. You're right. Like, you are right. Walks are going to hurt you. Please stop walking, guys. Here's my theory on why they're calling up Jose Abreu. We knew that Jose Abreu accepted the assignment to West Palm Beach. He was willing to do some business with you. He was willing to work with the Astros. I think that there was an under-the-table handshake agreement between Jose Abreu and then Astros Parliament, Jim Crane, Jeff Bagwell, Enos Cabell, Reggie Jackson, Dana Brown, Craig Biggio, all of those guys that, hey, you do us a solid, you go work on your swing for three weeks, and we're going to call you back up before the calendar rolls into June. I think there was an agreement before Jose Abreu accepted the assignment to West Palm Beach that, hey, you guys have to call me up by a certain date.
See, I never thought that, and I didn't try to put that kind of timestamp on it, and maybe that there is some validity to that as well. I just felt like the minute he did them a solid, there wasn't an if, it was a when. I didn't know when the when was going to be, but I knew that he was going to be back with another shot at big league baseball, because you don't see a guy put that much pride aside with a chance that, you know, you could do this on your own, resurrect your career and see if you could get someone else to, you know, pick you up anywhere in baseball. But the fact that he did them a super solid meant that I knew he was coming up. I just didn't expect it to be by June 1st. Nor do I want it to be right now, because of how well everybody else is hitting, including how comfortable Singleton has been since he's been playing more frequently and almost every day. I think he's only had one day off since he got the full-time starter job. I don't want to rock the boat right now either, so it's very untimely for me.
What do you think of the theory, though? What do you think of the theory that there was an understanding whenever they said, hey, Jose, we need you to go work on your swing in West Palm Beach. Okay, we're going to send you there. Go lift weights with Jeff Bagwell, who's still jacked, by the way. Jeff Bagwell is yoked, and his calves are mesmerizing.
How's his shoulder, though?
Probably not great.
Yeah.
Probably better than Michael Brantley's, though, who we thought was going to be back by opening day. I mean, he had surgery, but how much does that fix something?
I thought after his career was over, they did something so that he could golf pain-free and everything. It might mean that, you know, obviously no more baseball activity.
Yeah.
I thought they did something else.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that he had some procedures done, but I think that there's something to this. I really do. I mean, it's my theory. I'm trying it on for size. But, I mean, Jose, why would he accept the West Palm Beach deal except, you know, rather than just, hey, give me my money, I'm going to go somewhere else and play with somebody else. If the Astros didn't have a little wink, wink, hey, we're going to bring you back up before the calendar turns to June. You do this for us, you scratch our back, and then we're going to scratch your back. We promise you we're going to bring you back. I think that, why else would you bring them back? Why else would you bring them back right now on May 20th? It makes no sense other than that. That's the only plausible theory that makes any sort of sense.
Is there significance to the June 1st?
No, just I think that he didn't want to be there forever.
For that long?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I totally agree on the and have been adamant that there's no doubt he's getting a second chance because he did him a solid. I just didn't think it would be this soon. I thought that there was enough to do, whether it was laying off the weights, taking down some of the bulk, improving your bat speed and your swing, or just the fact you need to relax and press the reset button for an extended period of time. I don't understand it if he insisted or there was any kind of a June 1st date on it, but I expected him to be back sooner rather than later. I thought by the end of June.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the only plausible reason. Like, give me an alternate scenario that makes any sort of sense. Like, what is the eagerness to bring Abreu back right now? Is it performance based on what you're getting out of first base? No. John Singleton's been way better than what Jose Abreu gave you. Mauricio Dubon would be better than anything Jose Abreu gave you. And Joey Loperfido would be better than anything that Jose Abreu gave you. You're getting Chaz McCormick back. So, like, you have this, like, bench that's okay. You really have a surplus right now of guys that you're trying to get into the lineup every single day. I don't think that there is another theory that makes any sort of sense as to why Jose Abreu's coming back by the end of this, by the road trip, by the next road trip. Dana Brown telling that to Robert Ford on Astro Radio. So what other plausible theory is there than, hey, we're going to take care of you, Jose Abreu, and we're going to not back, we're going to back up our word that we gave you whenever this whole thing started.
Let me play the game show.
Yeah, let's do it.
The only other thing I could think of is you got Baggy down there, and he is, you know, supposed to be the one of the end-all be-alls in talent evaluation. And if he's telling you from what he's seen against live pitching that he's figured it out, that his swing is better than it's been, his bat speed is better, his whatever was not working is now working, to where he's made a few calls and said, no, he's ready, and we could use him. So let's go get him, because there's a lot for them riding on this more than there is for the ball club itself to feel like they're going to improve by putting him back in the lineup.
Yeah, maybe that's plausible. And Dana Brown said that Bagwell gave a good report. I saw videos of the swing. Blaine said I don't understand any of it. I read an article today that said he has not taken any in-game at-bats at all, only live pitching BP. That's not true. He's been in, what, three games in West Palm Beach, single-A games, or I think it's actually sub-single-A in West Palm Beach. But he has appeared in a few games. Now, he's not hitting well. Like, he was 1-for-4 today with a double. I think he's 3-for-11, 3-for-14, something like that. His swing does look a little better. Like, the video of the swing I saw, it looks quicker, looks simpler, looks through the ball. Like, he's not lunging out in front of his front foot. Now, will that change when he faces big league pitching and he's pressing, trying to, you know, impress his teammates? Maybe. Hopefully not.
I just think that from the standpoint, it's the double heard around the internet today. The fact that he got a double that was on video has got everybody just raising eyebrows, pointing fingers, and going, okay, look, he's doing some things. That's the only hit he got against very, very far away from major league pitching. Why are we rushing this guy back?
Because they had a handshake deal. They had a handshake deal under the table. A shrimp boat says, why wouldn't you bring Jose Abreu back?
Well, because of the reasons we gave that you just highlighted. The fact that you don't need him right now, that everybody that has basically filled his role are playing better defensively, which we didn't mention. Singleton's been playing a good defensive first base as well, which Abreu wasn't doing. We didn't see videos of him making great digs and great stops and great saves at first base either, and I don't need to see them. But I know that what I've seen at first base has been better than serviceable, and there's been more offensive production to where I don't feel that there's a desperate need to have Jose Abreu back on the squad right
now. I wouldn't even go that far. I don't think there's a need. Like, I'd rather have Trey Cabbage on this team right now than Jose Abreu, quite frankly. Like, the Jose Abreu that we saw, I would take Trey Cabbage over that Jose Abreu. Now, is it the final chance? One final look? You know, maybe that's the case. But do you have to do that on, you know, the week of May 20th? I think it's because they had a little agreement. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Astros open up a three-game series against the Angels today. So as we do every time, whenever the Astros begin a new series, is he an Angel or is he a Angel in the Outfield character from the movie? Is he an angel in the outfield, or is he a real lifetime, real life Los Angeles Angel of Anaheim. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, before we go to the break, I mean, look, if you watched any Game 7s yesterday or NBA basketball, you know the playoffs are heating up, and it's the perfect time for you to elevate your game just like the NBA playoffs at MyBookie.ag. I'm telling you right now, MyBookie.ag is the only place I tell you to go when you want to put a wager down on a game, because you can bet from anywhere at any time, and you never miss a chance to cash in on a big play. You can even live stream and bet on the games right from the sportsbook, giving you everything you'll need to decide, cash out or let it ride and go for the big bucks. MyBookie really makes it easy for you to get paid. Tons of boosted props and slam dunk parlays. Plus, new boosts are now posted on the daily. It's more than just a sports book. There's buzzer beaters, underdog upsets, and a community to share in all the excitement and conversation. Make all of it more fun, even the boring games, with MyBookie.ag. Give yourself a head start today and play with house money by getting a bonus by using our promo code BET975 when you make your first deposit. Again, promo code BET975. Claim a limited time bonus when you sign up and make your first deposit. And for you existing customers, they love you too. MyBookie has a reload bonus. So let's go. Get there now. Use the promo code BET975, MyBookie.ag. As I always tell you, and I always will, bet anything, anytime, anywhere. With the only place I tell you to do it, it's MyBookie.ag. Promo code BET975.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Is Abreu even hitting at West Palm? No, not very well. Front office just can't swallow their pride and admit Bagwell Lytics doesn't work. It's true.
Let's not sell Jim Crane out of that conversation either, because Crane had a little part to do with both Montero and
How do we really know, though? Like, how do we know what the pie chart looks like on decision-making in the Astros front office?
Well, we know he has the ultimate sign-off.
Sure.
And we know that he didn't have a general manager when he had any of those moves.
Yeah.
So even if you have the ear of Hall of Famers, I would think that he was still the trigger man, because there was really no one else left.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, might have been 95% Bagwell. Hey, we got it done. Just sign it off. Trust me, I'm Jeff Bagwell. Or it could have been 1% Jeff Bagwell. We have no clue. 3403, everyone knows you need manure in the garden for the flowers to bloom. Let Bagwell cook. Singleton isn't just being serviceable, he's contributing. Blaine. Yeah, I mean, he's been okay. He's been all right. He's been below first base standards in big league baseball. But he's been far better than what Jose Abreu gave you. He gives you a solid at bat. You know, he's going to walk. He's going to hit the ball out of the park. It's okay.
What, two ribbies yesterday?
I think so.
And two knocks. So, I mean, look, you'd love to see the average up a little bit and maybe some more pop. But at the same time, he's playing catch-up from the standpoint that he wasn't playing much. When he was playing, it wasn't good. Maybe it was because he was platooning. But the entire position has been a disaster the entire season. So anything he does for you or has done for you is a positive.
Yeah, it's a positive. It's still below, like, league average. If you pull up what he's done since Jose Abreu got sent down, his average has actually went down. Like, he was a 238 the day that Jose Abreu got sent to West Palm Beach. His average is now 233. But he has slugged more, and he's getting on base. Like, he's got a 230 average, not good. 343 on base, good. 426 slugging for first baseman, 769 OPS for first baseman, It's been okay. It's been all right. He's not your everyday solution. He's not your full-time solution. He might be your everyday solution this year, but he's not your full-time solution. All right, is he an angel, or is he an angel in the outfield? We got blinkers.
All right, you guys ready for this? It's either going to be a character name in the movie Angels in the Outfield, or it's a real-life Anaheim Angel. Okay, we'll start with the first one. George Knox.
You going first or me?
Sure, I'll go first. George Knox sounds like a Hollywood name. I'm going to go Angel in the Outfield.
Yeah, I don't know movies as well as I do baseball teams. I don't think that this is an angel, so I'll go movie character.
George Knox was Danny Glover's character.
Oh.
Three angels in the outfield, so you guys both score one there. All right, Michael Stefanik.
Jeremy.
Oh, I'm first. These are active roster guys. You didn't say that with much confidence.
Well, they're angels.
So not active roster?
So you're on the big league roster, whether you're playing right now or not.
This sounds a little bit great.
Wait, how can you be on the big league roster if you're not playing?
I mean, you could, like, so for instance, what's his name from Rice, the third baseman? He's Rendon? On the IL. But he would be on their big league roster enough to be eligible for this.
Okay, so you're kind of moving the goalpost here a little bit, but we got you. We can throw that in for this case. So 26-man roster plus team. Injured list?
Yes.
Okay. What'd you say this guy's name was?
His name is Michael Stefanik.
I'm going to go movie character.
I'm going actual real angel.
Real angel. Michael Stefanik is a backup infielder for the Angels.
Is he in the minors?
No.
He's on the active roster.
Okay, or injured list.
I'm checking that.
Or injured
list. Or injured list. Well, okay.
Question, look on the depth.
Maybe two, and we're already getting petty.
It's just active roster.
No way.
Just active roster, reinventing the wheel here.
Not, as you would say, I'm entertaining the people.
That's very different. But all right, number three.
Number three. Chase Silseth.
Sorry, what was that last name?
Chase Silseth.
Silseth? That sounds like That sounds like another Hollywood name. I'm going to say Angel in the outfield.
I'm throwing in the loop for this IL thing. I'll go Angel in the outfield, too.
Right-handed pitcher, Angel.
Michael Silseth? What was this guy's name? What was his first? Chase Silseth?
Chase.
I'm going to look at these guys later.
Okay, third one.
This will be fourth.
Yeah, this is number four.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I got to figure out where I am because you guys were trying to read into the order last time. Ranch Wilder.
That sounds like a Hollywood name.
His first name's Ranch?
Ranch Wilder.
That sounds like a Hollywood. I'm going to go Angel in the outfield, too.
Yeah.
Ranch Wilder, voice of the Angels in the movie.
I was about to say.
Jeremy would have had a point if he'd gone with the actual play-by-play guy.
All right, so Brian's up one on me.
Yep, 3-1 to
2-2. Roger Bowman.
Roger Dorn? Wrong movie.
Roger Bowman. Am I first here?
Yeah.
Roger Bowman. It's very generic. I'm going to say Real Angel.
I'm going to go movie guy.
Roger Bowman is the main character, the kid, in Angel in the Outfield.
Is he really?
Damn. Okay. Yes. All right, we're tied up.
Okay. Number six?
Yep. Erie Adrianza. Who's up first?
I'll go Real Life Angel. I'll go Real Life Angel.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yep. Backup third baseman. Utility infield. Mel Clark.
Mel Clark. Okay. I'm going to go Angel in the outfield.
Yeah, I think this is the only one that I know is an Angel in the outfield.
It's Tony Danza's character.
Tony Danza.
Angel in the outfield. That's 1, 2, 3, 4.
That's it. We're still tied. You have an extra one?
That's 7.
Because we tied. Yeah. All right. Kiss our sisters, I guess. Good game.
It's GG.
Good life.
Dual Brunson.
Yay. Come up with them quickly. You got one?
No.
Anthony Rendon. Michael Trout.
Jared Weaver. I'm just going to name...
old school.
Yeah, old angels, yeah.
Tim Salmon.
Garrett Anderson.
Tim Lincecum, who had a cameo in the Angels when he was trying to jump on with
the
team. Yeah.
Did he?
Mainly a Giant, right?
Troy Gloss.
Oh, Troy Percival.
That's pretty good.
What was the Astros had him later in his career. He was the punter at Nebraska.
Too. Darren Erstad?
Erstad.
There yeah, Darren
That's
Erstad.
Right. He was on those bad
Married
Astros
Married a girl
teams.
From U of H that was in their PR department. Jessica something. She was
oh,
in
their
PR department.
Yeah. Huh. I had no idea. He was the coach at Nebraska for a little while.
That's right.
Darren Erstad. Yeah. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Hunter Brown is Jalen Green with one slight difference. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I have to tell you about your first place Houston Sabercats. That's right. Sabercats are dominating right now, by the way. They're 10-1 in 11 games played. They have the best record in the Western Conference in Major League Rugby. They have the most points scored in anybody in the Western Conference in Major League Rugby. And they just won against Chicago this past Saturday by one. They beat Chicago 23-22. You should have been there. You should have been there. The excitement through the roof. It is tons of fun. If you like football, you're going to love Sabercats Rugby. 80 minutes of nonstop collision and athleticism and winning 10 of their last 11, 10 of their first 11. It's like football meets wrestling meets basketball, and the players are crazy athletes. Some of the best players from all over the world play in this league, Major League Rugby. Go check out the Sabercats at Sabercats Stadium. Next chance for you to do that, to check out the Sabercats, will be a little bit later in June, whenever they take on NOLA. And then in June, a couple of matches coming up. RFC Los Angeles. Make sure you're there on June 8th, Seattle on June 15th, and then they're on the road for a week and then back at home against Dallas. So you have plenty of opportunities this summer to watch the Houston Sabrecats continue to win. First place in the Western Conference. They're hunting a championship, and tickets are inexpensive. So bring your family or friends. You won't be disappointed. HoustonSabrecats.com for tickets. That's right, HoustonSabrecats.com. The stadium right off of 288 at Airport Boulevard. See you there. HoustonSabrecats.com for tickets. First place, Houston Sabrecats.
ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.